Come on. Workers of the world, hello and welcome to Dynamite Neddy. I am Evrock Clare, socialist champion and head of the Dock Workers Union. So that is Evrock, nice one, big man. There's your niche reference to Estonian socialist role-playing game Disco Elysium. But the voice you're hearing just now is myself, Mick Clockerty. Joining me, as always, we have Mr. Michael McCormick.
What's happening?
And Mr. Andy MacArthur.
Karichi fucking Wattroops. Long time no see.
Right, boys, what's been happening? What he's been up to?
Do you want to go first, McCormick? Because there's not been a lot on in my world, man, to be honest. Basically, we've just, we're sort of just coming out of lockdown now, fingers crossed, everything crossed. But I've been trying to get fucking into a few games, but they're just not doing it for me. So what I usually do is I usually spend like fucking couple of hours on each one to see if I like it or not, and then just bin it if I don't. And I always find myself going back to like the old fucking classics. Like last night, I was sitting playing Knuckles Chaotix again. For like how many times have I played that? Man, I've been playing that for 20 odd years, and I played it last night again. It's still shite.
Here's one for you, right? Because I read I think it was a Twitter thread. It was either a Twitter thread or some kind of Tumblr kind of lib shit article that said people that suffer from anxiety tend to watch the same TV shows over and over again because it's comforting when you know what happens. And while I was reading it, I was like, I reckon I'd do that with video games a wee bit.
Aye, maybe, man. I think everybody in this day and age fucking suffering a wee bit with anxiety, and you're probably right in that. I mean, I don't know if you get this day, but sometimes you can be spoilt for choice. Like, when we were wee guys, you only had, like, I'm going to go back to that old kind of old thing I'm saying, there's a wee pile of games. You only had a wee pile of games, but now you've got fucking everything, and it's like when you go on Netflix, man, you've got it all. You went to Blockbuster, you had to pick up maybe one or two fucking videos, but now you've got it all, and you're absolutely spoilt for choice.
I had the exact same thing. Like, a few weeks ago, they released the bundle for racial justice and equality, which is one of the best kind of deals, basically, of in gaming history. It was like minimum $5, you pay the money, it goes to charity, and you get, I think, something like 1,700 indie games.
I mean, it's about that. See, there's at least fucking 10 of them on there that you would have paid that money for, you know, on their Todd. There's a lot of fucking shite as well, but there's a lot of undiscovered gems. But the point is, you just get so much bang for your buck, do you know what I mean?
Where do you start, man? Where do you start? And you're certainly not going to finish, you know?
And I had the same problem you were kind of talking about, because I had, 1,700 games at my fingertips just to start, and I dipped in and out of a couple of them, but then the next time I turned on my PC, I was like, I could try something new, or I could just play Slay the Spire again.
It's a wee bit like what they say. It's like people that want all the money in the world and all the happiness in the world, and then you get there and you just want more. We're at a point now where, in 1995, we would call what we've got now paradise. All right, we've got a virus and that, but I'm talking about like computer games and like videos and like everything. We've got everything at my fucking fingertips, but now we're at a point where, what the fuck, what do we do, man?
If you've downloaded some emulators onto your computer and you've downloaded like every Sega game that ever existed and every main game that ever existed, and you don't know what to play next, what I would suggest is getting two of your pals and starting a retro gaming podcast with them.
Well, that's one thing.
Because it kind of focuses your attention on one particular game that you can play.
Bring
for
your magic back.
I definitely had the thought as a child, albeit it wasn't anything as abstract as using a computer to play the games. But imagine you had every fucking Mega Drive game. It was more just like a big room, no, maybe like a giant Blockbuster that just had all the games, and thinking, fuck, man, what would that be like? You could just play anything, like.
Aye, I know. That's the way it was. And it was like, there was always a wee mystique about, you would get wee stories about, oh man, seeing this game, this happens and that. And like, yeah, and you're thinking in your head, picturing it yourself. But now all you need to do is fucking fly it on an emulator, do a level skip to where you're going, and you can see it right away. Man, that's not magic. These games had a bit of magic about them. And I suppose the curtain's kind of been lifted a bit with us, but spoiled for choice.
And you need a bit of discipline, and you need to set yourself some rules. Otherwise, you'll just, you know, never make a choice.
It must be a fucking downer with playground rumours. No, look, back in the day when Crash Bandicoot first came out or something like that, you could have went about St. Mary's Playground and went like that. See, if you do this, that, and the other thing, you can see Crash Bandicoot's arse. and people would say, no, you can't, but they would never quite be sure, and yeah, you would get people that would try and do it. No, you could go on YouTube in 5 seconds and be like, no, you can't. Right. Like, I've watched the entire game. I've watched hours and hours of it. You can't see Crash Bandicoot's arse.
Aye, which kind of takes something out of culture a wee bit, doesn't it? I mean, that was half a banter when you were younger. It was like, oh, if you're talking about computer games, oh, this happens, that happens, and you're thinking to yourself, fuck, I need to see this, but I've not got £40. I'll need to wait my birthday, or I'll need to wait to Christmas. And that was part of excitement, you know?
It was a big one run about the original Pokemon games, about how you could catch Mew. How Mew was in it, and you could get him, which turned out to be true. You could fucking glitch it and get him. But a playground rumour was that he was hiding under a van. And I knew, I was like, that's fucking nonsense, that's bullshit. But I tried it. I fucking tried it.
That was that rumour that's kind of spontaneously appeared in playgrounds across the whole world. I think, like, just every school discovered that one on their own.
Aye. But, I mean, how are Wayne's going to find a franchise now? Because obviously this is, it's been reflected in like the music business and that as well, where everything's all kind of fragmented. It used to be you were given what you were fed, you know, but now everything's all like air, it's earth, but you've got to pick what you want. So you've got to use your own intuition now to kind of find something you like.
Do you know what a lot of the youngsters get that fucking playground lore fix out of, and why I think it's got enduring popularity, is Minecraft.
Alright. I've not played it.
Probably wouldn't do much for you. It doesn't do much for me. But in terms of this fucking land of, like, infinite possibilities, and, you know, being able to discover things and find things, and because you can download all these different packs, and you can go into your pals' worlds and explore them and stuff like that. Like, so fucking, you still get wee guys fucking swearing blue in the face. No, man, I fucking seen that on Minecraft. Like, you can fucking do that, and then probably go and checking it themselves out.
Aye, different world, man. Different world. It's like, I don't know. The games as we know are kind of changing, man. I mean, they're still there. I mean, the games as we know, the standalone things are still there, but they're kind of the popular culture aspect is kind of migrating from like a standalone game to more like a kind of a subscription based kind of entity.
Aye, a live experience that you get, like Destiny or something, or Fortnite, where it's like you get the game and they want you to basically, this is the game you're going to be playing for the rest of your life. We're going to keep updating it. You're going to have to keep paying for additional bits and stuff like that.
Aye, it's like, our games are more niche now. Like, our games, standalone games, are becoming more a niche, whilst the Wayne's have been sort of took over to this kind of battle royale kind of, as you said, like, just constantly updating the same game with new things and like new episodes. And instead of sequels, you're getting episodic things now. And I don't fucking know, man. It's a different world, mate. Different world.
Well, there's still some pretty cool stuff coming out, even if it is niche, even if it's not going to be discussed by the whole world. You might find something that not many people have experienced and enjoying it yourself. I played one game for that bundle, one game held my attention till finishing it, called Sagebrush. And I don't know if you know this about me, right, but I'm quite interested in cults. This is a game about a cult. One of your kind of Jonestown type things where there's been a mass suicide, and you're at the site of this kind of mass cult suicide, and you're going and kind of finding out what happened and the audio logs and stuff like that.
Is that a point and click?
No, it's like I guess you'd call it a walking simulator. Kind of going around doing like kind of light puzzle solving and listening to diaries and stuff like that.
Do you find Ghislaine's diary and the Temple of Moloch and all that?
It's one of that, because I'm familiar with all the different, you know, different types and varieties of cults. This would be, I guess you would call it kind of like a sort of radical Christian offshoot type one, where the guy...
Well, one of them ones.
He's had a kind of personal revelation for God, and he's written his own new book of the Bible and stuff like that.
Basically Catholicism.
Well,
that's the opposite of Catholicism. Catholicism is there are no new books in the Bible. Fuck off, sit down.
So what's your favourite cult? If you had to pick, I've got mine, right? I'll let you say first. What's your favourite cult?
Right, it's
got to
be Heaven's Gate for me.
Oh, man. Right.
For me, it's got to be the Moonies.
That's the ones I was thinking of. See the ones with the big hats, is that...
It came from Korea, and I think it attracted a lot of kind of virgin loser incel types, because if you join the Moonies, you get married, so everybody got their hole when they joined the Moonies.
I have these big mass wedding ceremonies and stuff like that.
It's fucking weird, man. Well, I was going to say Heaven's Gate as well, but only because, like, man, I don't know. Not how, like, obviously you've got hymns and shit. Like, every, like, cult's get to say hymns.
Yeah.
And Heaven's Gate's ones was like some kind of, like, post-rave kind of techno kind of vibe to, you know.
What is your favourite hymn, by the way? Are we all on Colours of Day, I take it?
Oh, man, no. Mr. Kerr, man, and Sing It in the Valleys. What a version. What a version he done that, man. Whoa.
Bit of Catholic lore for you there. I like Heaven's Gate because it kind of ticks all the boxes. You've got, like, obscure Christian Gnostic stuff combined with... in 90s internet culture combined with aliens, and of course capping it all off with a big old mass suicide at the end, where it turns out they were all wearing the same type of trainers or something. That was quite notable.
They all cut their boys off and bought a pair of new 90s, I don't know why.
Did they not go out and kind of have a last hurrah? Did they not go to, like, a casino or something like that? I'm sure with Heaven's Gate, they had this pure last, like, day out thing before they done it.
Heaven's Gate, you can just look at the guy's eyes, man, right? I mean, have you seen his video where he talks about, like, the
last chance to evacuate planet Earth?
Aye, and it looks as if he's fucking swallowed, like, 10 bad eggies, like, not even just the £2 ones, like, the full fucking bifters.
See if we were a cult and I put my hand on your shoulders and said, boys... tomorrow morning, I'm going to cut your balls off. You're going to be wearing these Air Max. I'm going to put 10 eggies up your arse, and then we're all going to commit suicide. But in the 24 hours preceding, you get to spend all that time with one video game. What do you go for?
Oh, fuck. That's a good fucking question. Do you know what came into my head first, and it surprisingly, it wasn't Sonic 3 Knuckles? Toe Jam and Earl.
Oh, see the random element of Toe Jam and Earl, I guess. You get something new every time, although you're getting something familiar every time.
Toe Jam and Earl would be a good preview of what life in outer space is going to be like.
that would be like a fucking sequel to Heaven's Gate Bible. Something like that.
Big start in our religion. If we all commit suicide when the comet reaches its closest point to Earth, we get transported to Funkatron.
Right. No, you could have indoctrinated me at 10-year-old with that. That's better than your confirmation getting to Funkatron. I love going to Funkatron, man. Over the past week, I've been playing a lot of Disco Elysium, or Disco Elysium, I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
I'm so glad I've got somebody I can, like, finally talk about it with. So good.
It's one of my favourite games ever made. Like, it came out in 2019, and it is honestly fucking top 5 for me. And for somebody into retro games... I would say fucking... so is Persona 5, and that probably came out, like, 2017 or something like that. Like, so there's slowly creeping in more modern games into my fucking top list, but...
If you like kind of old-school PC RPGs, and also if you like, you know, reading and politics and all that shit that we like,
you
fucking love Disco Elysium. If you're a nerd in about 5 different intersected ways...
It's really fucking dark as well, but funny, and you play as a Jakey, and a guy really looks like a Jakey. Doesn't he look... he's not got, like, hot scruff, he's like a fucking big smelly scruff. Fucking eye. He's like, he looks like you would find him in a fucking pub in Greenock Town Centre.
Cheers.
And you can imagine what he would smell like as well. Aye, it's amazing.
Is it a bit like that Planescape Torment? That was quite a bit of the darkest game ever, man.
It's a bit like Planescape Torment, actually.
To the degree where it's been called a spiritual successor to it.
Aye, but, like, you play as an ugly guy with name Emery in Planescape Torment as well, but in Planescape Torment you're in, like, a Dungeons and Dragons fantasy world, whereas in this you're in a kind of like washed up fictional Eastern European state.
It's all very post-Soviet, and there was a failed revolution 40 years ago, and now some fucking international capitalist coalition controls the place, and just fucking a young team run amok. There's fucking crime everywhere, everybody's pure poor, there's drinking speed everywhere. It's a wee bit like a Greenock simulator, to be honest.
North Korea.
No, because there's no party controlling things. It's just it's a wee bit more like fucking
Wasteland,
the young team running the streets, fucking people living in poverty and fear.
Mick made his mission in the game to get a really amazing trackie, which you can do.
I got a cracking track in a game, aye. I also made my character a really staunch communist, which I wish fucking Mare Games gave you the option to, but basically I was fucking kicking about in full Adidas going, we're going to kill all these rich cunts, and then banging speed and doing like Dungeons and Dragons style dice rolls. So in many ways it was my perfect game.
Did Command and Conquer let you fight for Stalin? They let you go communist, didn't they, in one of the games?
Aye.
Come on,
the best play. One.
It's set, in the opening video, Albert Einstein creates a time machine and he uses it to go back in time and kill Hitler, which creates a world where the Cold War never ended. So you get to play either on the side of the Russians or the side of, I guess, the equivalent of NATO.
So how did the Cuban Missile Crisis get resolved then? The Cold War just kept going.
I guess either it didn't happen or it just, Yeltsin never fucked it for everyone.
Or maybe the last 5 year plan worked a treat.
Yeah. You could have went either way.
I tried to start Dark Souls last night as well. I don't know if either of you are From Software heads.
I mean, I've got Bloodborne. I tried my best with it, but it's really fucking difficult and I didn't really have the patience for it. Sorry, Leo. I know Leo was a massive fan of those games.
I'm going to get stuck into Dark Souls. I think I played it past the first boss, and then I was exploring this new area, and then I just got owned by these two generic skeletons. They kicked my cunt in, and it put me back to a bonfire at the start of a level, and I was like, fuck this, man. But apparently that is the quintessential Dark Souls experience, and you just
is it a hard eye? I've heard this. Dark Souls 3 and just like fucking typing 3 dots just to like explain how hard it is.
People that are into these games, like Bloodborne and Dark Souls and that, go, aye, it's fucking, you die all the time and you'll be in a pure bad mood and be wanting to launch a controller and that, you'll be pure soured, it's horrible and that. But aye, it's really good, I would recommend it, like, you've got to check it out. How can it be both things?
I hate getting beat in games, man. Honestly, I think I'd last about fucking 2 minutes or something in a game like that, but hey-ho. We'll get eclectic tastes.
We do indeed, and speaking of which, will we move on to the... Well, for reminding any lore heads out there, been a while since we've had one of these. Just to remind you, we are each taking a look at an arcade game that we exchanged with each other at the end of the last arcade special.
Yep.
And we're going to kick things off, I think, with... Well, Mick, do you want to go first with Hammer and Harry?
Aye.
I'll talk about why I gauge it. Hammer and Harry was made by, remember.
Irem,
is it?
Yeah.
Pronounced IREM. Yep. So they had these quite kind of iconic sprites. I don't know, the Irem games have got a fucking charm to them. They're definitely very Japanese. But basically the reason I picked it is because you could, well, for starters, it's fun, it's charming and that. Like, I like it. It's got the fucking Andy Mack big sprites on show.
Nice.
You're a wee guy running about with a big hammer, fucking panelling cunts, platforming and that. And also it's got a lot of fucking easy Marxist symbolism. What Hammer and Harry is specifically out to get the bosses of this one construction company. That's his goal.
Jen the Carpenter.
Aye.
That was a Japanese name for it, apparently. You can just tell it's been pure Americanized, isn't it? Hammering, but not even hammering, Hammering Harry. It's like good old fucking Hammer and Harry.
Hammer and Harry is a far better name of an arcade machine than Jem the Carpenter. Let's get the alliteration and shit like that, man. It's a classic.
I think it was known in Japan as Daiko no Jensan.
In Japan, he is a more beloved character. He is in a lot more games. There's a game where he goes to space and stuff like that. But I think we only really got the OG. So, Mick, how did you get on with it?
It's all right. From what I could gather, the story of the game is that Hammer and Harry is maybe like a kind of union organizer of some kind. He's making moves to kind of start getting the workers to sort of band together and kind of argue for better pay and conditions and stuff like that. But a load of heavies get sent to his house with big hammers and basically smash up his house. Which you see in the kind of opening intro sequence. This enrages Harry, and he basically goes in a complete rampage through like most of the heavy industry in Japan. And
he just gets panelled by scabs and strike breakers.
Exactly. That's what I got from it. So he just basically goes in a complete rampage and starts tearing apart various industrial sites. The levels are like there's one in a kind of lumber yard. There's one in like, a shipyard. And then finally,
it's all shipyards.
Yeah, I mean, you unfortunately, it could be Greenock.
One of the things striking for me, I've played maybe the first three levels. I don't know if you would go as far as to call it physics, but see the way Harry's hammer interacts with the environment. Some fucking pretty decent stuff there, and how fucking things in the foreground and the background can affect you. Like, there's guys you can scud with your hammer that are just eating at a cafe, and their bowl of ramen will fly in the air and land on your head, and it's got a really kind of satisfying effect. And a kind of sub boss or a mid boss that you fight, you need to whack these kind of cement bags at them, and there's just a really kind of satisfying fucking mechanic to using a hammer to whack things back at the guy.
It's pretty cool. It's got a kind of, as you say, like a kind of rudimentary physics engine. In the first couple of levels, you kind of get a hold of these wooden boxes that you can kind of hammer about, and they'll sort of like bounce around and sort of slide against the floor and kind of hit other enemies and stuff like that. It's kind of halfway between a beat 'em up and a platformer, I would say. Like you're not moving in the kind of up and down that you would in a Streets of Rage, but it's just left to right kind of platforming, hitting things with your hammer. But that's the kind of standout feature of it, is this sort of physics stuff.
Do you know what it reminded me of a wee bit? Remember that Astro Boy game you gave me for the Game Boy? It kind of reminded me of that, where, as you said, it's like part platformer, part beat 'em up.
Yeah.
Maybe not as like advanced as what Astro Boy was in terms of battle system and that, but it's got the same state of graphics.
Now that you mention it, it looks a wee bit fucking anime. He's got a kind of Astro Boy charm to him.
The thing that kind of stuck out to me was that the art style was that I thought it was all very Japanese. Like, there's a kind of particularly Japanese look about the characters. It doesn't look like any building site I've ever seen in the west of Scotland.
Well, hang on, where are all these safety regulations and
people act like hard working, sort of diligent people? It's very alien to me. Harry cuts about. He's got like a kind of headband thing on.
They all had headbands on in the 90s, but.
the construction workers have got like these big yellow helmets with a big H on them, and I quite like just like the design of some of the characters. Like, you end up in the first level, you're fighting this boss who I guess is meant to be like a kind of a corrupt
a foreman
boss or something. Foreman, but he's got what I can only describe as like a kind of Scottish hip hop look to him.
He's wearing a chain and sunglasses and like a helmet and like, this kind of green tracky top.
A big chain with like a kind of lion's head. Yeah, like a big chain with a lion's head on it and a kind of white t-shirt underneath.
And he flings bags of cement at you, and you whack him with a hammer and fucking scud him in the face. It's great fun, to be honest.
The baddies look good, man. See, we guys that use their kind of jackhammer to bounce on like a pogo stick.
The construction theme kind of just carries on through the whole game.
You basically dismantle an entire company. I think it's maybe only about five stages, and the final boss is like the boss. It's the fucking CEO of this construction company. He throws money at you. He's like a fucking robotic fucking CEO guy, aye?
Hammer and Harry basically caused Japan's last Great Depression. Like, he basically destroyed an entire segment of the economy while he was getting his revenge on this construction company. But it's the game kind of continues like that. Just kind of a bit of platforming mixed up with this sort of physics-based...
I understand all the, now the themes are like, as you said, like building sites and stuff. What is with the 10-foot mole with the electric helmet?
Well, I mean, this company, as well as, you know, being very anti-union, they're definitely breaking a lot of employment laws, but employing giant sentient animals to work for them. Like, I don't know if that mole was getting pay or like a decent pension plan or like if he gets healthcare and all that. I highly doubt it.
And also, it doesn't really take long in the Hammer and Harry canon, as I say, before he starts going into outer space and things like that. It definitely takes further flights of fancy. That Hammer and Harry, the first gen, is definitely the most grounded Hammer and Harry game.
It's a wee bit like the Rambo series, where the first one is quite realistic.
The Hangover series.
First one's quite realistic, self-contained. It's got like a kind of premise and it sticks with it. And then after that, they're just like, fuck it, we'll send them to space, we'll send them underwater.
The producers get involved in that, the money men get involved and stuff. I know what you're saying.
Hammer and Harry had a decent amount of ports as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Aye, it looks like it did. You know, those games on the Famicom, the Game Boy, I think it made it as far as the PSP as well. I think the original arcade ones, where it's at, as we've kind of noticed in some of these things, the graphics on these games were just like even shoulders above what you were getting on home consoles at the time.
Towering above them, man.
Fucking
high-res sprites.
So you look at Hammer and Harry came out in 1990, and then the Super Nintendo one, I'm guessing, came out, what, 3 or 4 years later, probably. And it's not going to look anywhere near as good as the arcade one, really, is it?
Yeah, presentation's really good. And also, one thing I really liked, that the music was kind of forgettable, but the sound effects were, I really enjoyed. And when you hit things with a hammer, it makes this lovely big, like, wong sound.
See, the music... The music reminded me very much of the kind of Mystical Ninja games. Again, it's very Japanese, like dun 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 dun.
This could be a precursor to Mystical Ninja, because the wee guy does look like Mystical Ninja, Gomen, a wee bit.
I think that's. I didn't really make that comparison at first, but yeah, graphically. But I like Mystical Ninja. It's just kind of not trying to be anything other than Japanese. I think it's kind of. Wears those cultural influences on his sleeve, and probably like us playing it as children when they point a reference would have been completely confused by it.
The big mole is like if you look at the end screen, right, which says congratulations, obviously, and you see the whole cast, it's a kind of common staple arcade games where the full cast of characters would be on at the end saying thank you. That big mole, that shouldn't be here.
Is that Is it a bit like the end of Star Wars where Chewbacca doesn't get a medal?
Exactly. You've got the big foreman, as you said, you've got like, fucking all your wee enemies with helmets and that on, and then just this massive 10-foot, at least 2-foot bigger than every other character, mole, stunning.
Actually, now, I remember now, actually, because the mole is wearing like a kind of mind control helmet thing. So he's not even employed. He's like a completely unwilling slave of this fucking corrupt company.
Is Hammer and Harry doing good praxis? Because he has taken out a lot of his fellow workers there.
Aye.
Well, if you go with the theory that they're all scabs, then yes, probably do get what they deserve.
And he fights the boss at the end, but he is killing a lot of boys on that building site. They should really have had this as a two-player, where player two is a mole and it fights with a giant sickle, and that's my 2 cents on it.
I could be right. I mean, anything could be right with this game. I mean, fuck's sake, I'm looking at the congratulations screen now, and the things that I can through my head to just know what make a story out of a picture. I mean, you're going to look at expression on a foreman's face, man, and you've already got a 1,000-page book.
Well, I mean, admittedly, we've not got a lot of evidence for this interpretation, this kind of Marxist interpretation of the story of this game. But one thing you do get is at the end when he defeats the final boss, and he's, you know, the CEO that ends up in a pure robot suit trying to destroy you, and he's like, "Oh, don't kill me, I'll pay you." And then he's like, "Money isn't everything."
Yeah. Who's the wee guy with shades and a chamois on his hat? His hard hat.
One of the many
strange bosses you fight, aye.
There's a wee guy with a shamrock on his hat and he's got a big smile on his face. I don't know what actually looks Irish, that's stereotypical, but it looks as if he's having a pretty good time.
He's involved with trade unions, but he's corrupt. He does a lot of collections for the provos and that, but then he doesn't actually send them the money. So oh. Harry's like, "Ah, here, fuck you, man. I'm going to send the boys the money."
And he uses that hat for a whip round, does he?
Exactly. It's like a pub in the Gallagher. He's like, "Here, boys, you want to buy a raffle ticket?" But any raffle never takes place. And you're like,
That was really common in 90s Japan. I've not got a whole lot much more to say on Hammer and Harry. I quite enjoyed it. If you're a fan of maybe something like River City Rampage or the Scott Pilgrim versus the World game for Xbox 360.
Do you know what? Actually,
kind of reminded me a bit of that with the physics stuff.
He controls like Ramona Flowers in that game. She walks about with a big kind of hammer like Amy Rose. The Fisonic is another one.
Do you know what? That's one film I really fucking enjoy. You know what I mean? When you go to pictures and you just really enjoy a film. Like, a Joker, really enjoy that. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, man. Fucking brilliant tools, man.
In fact, I seen it with McCormick, I think, and there would be odd time where you would get a wee sound effect, like the ring noise for Sonic, you'd be fucking shoving each other, you fucking hear that,
Class, man, what a film.
I think any fan of this podcast would find something to enjoy in it. Guess last thing to say is that the Workers United will never be defeated.
Solidarity forever. Right, well, moving swiftly on then, Andy, why don't you talk about why you picked Virtua Fighter for myself?
Aye, no bother. Obviously, me being a big Sega fan, as if you didn't know, if you've listened to this show before, you'll know it's what I talk about. And this is one of, if not one of the best, one of the most important games that Yu Suzuki brought out, who was probably the most influential programmer of Sega's arcade division. They brought out a new arcade board called the McCormick. Is it a System 32 it was called or something?
Oh, you put me on the spot here.
Model 2. It was a Model 2. It was just, they were just starting to get into the whole arena 3D graphics. And they weren't quite ready to do it yet, but they were trying it anyway. They were pushing on with it. I mean, they were even trying to bring out like virtual reality headsets and stuff at the time. So what you've got with Virtua Fighter 1 is a very rudimentary 3D fighting game, and in its most basic sense.
Well, it's the first. At least it's considered the first, very much.
I can't think of one that came before it. I mean, I don't really know if there's any other ones. I know there's a lot of early kind of 3D fighting games, but I'm not too sure if, like, I think you might be right. I think Virtua Fighter might be the first one.
I'm pretty sure it's the first. But for me,
fucking looks it anyway.
for me, very much getting into it, the first 3D fighting game I had exposure to, I'm nearly sure, must have been Tekken. I'm thinking before that, maybe I had seen Virtua Fighter at a pub or something like that. I can't really remember, but definitely my exposure to early 3D fighting games is almost entirely Tekken. I had Tekken 2. A demo disc yet, and then the full game, and me and Aero, long time podcast collaborator, played through all your classic Tekken games, particularly 2 and 3, we would have fucking razzed fuck out of. Virtua Fighter's no something I had a great deal of knowledge about, or even a great deal of experience with.
I suppose it's a wee bit like the sort of Mortal Kombat versus Street Fighter dichotomy, which we talked about quite a lot in the last episode. But I mean, I think Virtua Fighter is sometimes maybe considered not in as in his extreme a way as those two games, but maybe more the kind of Thinking Man series in comparison to Tekken.
Funnily enough, this is basically my main note for playing it, so we'll jump ahead a wee bit in terms of my chat and come back to other stuff. As you boys will know for playing me at fighting games, listeners, I am pretty obnoxious. I find out really, really basic tactics. A lot of button mashing, a lot of trying to just force you into a corner. I do that thing with Chun-Li. I do that thing with Chun-Li where I backflip and I backflip and you follow me. Then I backflip half a back wall and then trap you and just do the fucking kicks till you're dead.
It works.
Works all the time. Raphael on Soul Calibur 2, no joke. I think I had about a 2-year unbeaten spell with him.
Eddie for Tekken, that was mine.
Eddie for Tekken, you are a monster, mate. But you try and do that on Virtua Fighter, and a game will laugh at you a wee bit. I go in, and I'm trying to do my usual spammy tactics. Well, for starters, I'm like, one of the main things about a fighting game is that you need to find your character, right? Mm-hmm. You need to find... Generally, I'll scroll through them and I'll pick what one I think looks the coolest. And then also, if they control the coolest, I'm like, ah, cool, I've got my person. Or I try and figure out a wee bit about how they play. So there was a few different characters in the first Virtua Fighter. Well, I know, Andy, you're a big Kage guy. Kage's the ninja.
I was calling Cage, man. Cage, sorry.
We'll call him Cage. There's like Wolf, a big giant like Native American guy, and a couple of different people. I ended up settling on this dude called Lau, who I think is supposed to vaguely be like a kind of kung fu artist. He comes from China. He's got a ponytail and a moustache. But
he's landy.
He's kind of landy. My typical character would have probably been Merlit Pai. She's like Mary, a kind of speedy character, but for whatever reason, I ended up settling on Lau and playing as him. So, as I was saying to you in the chat, it struck me that it is a wee bit like Bushido Blade, uh-huh. I found a lot of the time, I don't usually block in games, specifically fighting games, but a lot of the time I found myself with a block button held in, just waiting for that wee window to fucking buff, 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 to fucking get the attack off. It's Virtua Fighter, at least the first one, is about looking for an opening, because once you have that opening in your opponent's defences, you can fucking fuck them up. You can take out most of their health, but the same thing can happen to you. So it is kind of a thinking man's fighting game. It's about no blinking. It's about fucking holding your defences, wait until the fucking computer makes a wee fuck up or a human opponent, which I've not yet tried to play against, and going for it. I found with Lau, once I found out how to do a pretty basic combo, which I think was just hitting the punch button. I was playing with a joystick and arcade buttons, by the way, that fucking plug-in thing, which fucking made the experience 10 times better anyway, and emulating it for MAME. But I'd learned how to do a pretty basic combo with Lau, which I think was like punch, 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 kick, punch, or something like that, and he just did this fucking thing. And if I could land that on somebody, I'd fight over. I didn't get to the last boss, I maybe got 5 or 6 fights in arcade mode, but I could do that on a fucking single credit. And that got me thinking, although when this came out, this would have been one of your premium machines, you know, you're probably talking about a quid for a game of Virtua Fighter, which would have been a pretty penny back in the day, or 50p at least, maybe, when it first came out.
You're not far away with a pound, man, defo.
Once you've learned how to play a character, and you've had a couple of shots at it, you will get a decent run in arcade mode. You're not just going to fucking die. It's no unfair. I think for the price of your quid, at least you would have had a decent shot. In fact, now that I remember, Mick, in terms of Hammer and Harry, what do you reckon, as a kid, I don't know if that came out in 1990, so maybe would have been about 20p ago or something like that.
Yeah, I'd have been, that'd be a month's wages to complete that for me, man.
Easy, man.
It's one of your classic beat 'em up sort of, it's going to completely drain you of all money trying to complete that one.
After a couple of tries at Hammer and Harry, I could get through the first stage and half of the second stage on one credit.
Aye, I never got to that level of mastery. I mean, it's not quite as unfair as maybe something like Turtles in Time or something, but I still did find it would be quite an expensive one.
Bye, anyway, so Virtua Fighter, I never got to the last boss, although Leo Glaister, another collaborator of the podcast, he's a lorehead and quite a big Virtua Fighter fan. He tells that the last boss is this thing called... Drow, aye, that's like a kind of lassie robot, but it's...
Female cyborg Shang Tsung type that uses everybody's moves.
Aye, but the interesting thing about Drow for me was... See if you got a Drow in arcade mode and you die against her, you don't even get to put more money in to try again.
Nah, no, it's just that because it's a bonus, it's not a final round, it's a bonus round. It says another wee tidbit about Drow, you know, in a lore, it's Cage's missing mother.
Aye, aye,
aye, that's a bit mental, man.
Interesting.
Is it some sort of fucked up experiments done on?
There's no other subtext, just that.
But, very Freudian.
But Jarrell's funny because you get us quite a lot. I mean, I say quite a lot. Mortal Kombat is the only one I can think of where you've got a fighter that can sort of morph into. Like, can you basically use everybody else's moves?
No, they're.
Is that quite common? Aye,
you get that in Tekken. A couple of different ones in Tekken games. Tekken 3, you've got Mokujin. He's a wee wooden guy.
Oh,
and he uses all the different fighters' moves. The Soul Calibur series has got a couple of different ones in them as well.
So it's that a trope, then, aye. Well,
it's a common fighting game, I think. So, I think actually probably a lot more prevalent in 3D fighting games, though. And your 2D one, Shang Tsung's your main example of it, aye.
Aye. Well, the thing about the Jurel fight, I don't know if Leo dealt you, it's underwater, man. Now, I don't know how that kind of translates into Virtua Fighter 1, because one of the main criticisms of Virtua Fighter 1, and the reason why it was kind of rebooted and re-released was because the jump mechanic wasn't refined properly. Apparently it's
oh, you go halfway to the moon.
Aye, people describe it as
way up there, right?
Aye. The moon, aye. So
I don't know. It's a bit like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Aye. So if you're underwater, man, and you're jumping, then fucking hell, how high are you jumping underwater? I've not played the first one in that far to Jurel, but I can imagine like fucking.
I kind of want to hear a bit more about like how the actual fighting mechanics of this work, because the way that you kind of spoke about it was like it was almost a bit of a mental game. Like when you talk about Bushido Blade, it's kind of it's not about hammering the buttons; it's about just like knowing the right time to strike, and like a few hits can be fatal. You reckon that's the case?
I reckon it's the case. Like, most of the characters for me in Virtua Fighter 1 anyway control pretty similar. There's no a great deal of difference among their movesets. So everybody's pretty equally equipped, and just it's got this thing where I don't know if it's due to limitation or whatever, but maybe it's one of those things where limitation actually ends up creating something better. If you leave an opening, you can just get fucking owned. Like, somebody can just fucking panel fuck at you. You let that first hit in, and then it's buff, buff, aye, buff, 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 buff. You're done. So you need to look for that same opening in an opponent.
Aye.
So it was counterintuitive to me to play it first, because all of a sudden I was having to block in a fighting game, which I don't agree with, and I don't like doing, but I had to do it.
I think one of the reasons why it's kind of considered technical is because obviously it was the first 3D fighting game, and it kind of uses a Z-axis a lot more than a lot of fighting games do now. Like, it was a big thing in the day. Like, the Virtua label indicated that on-screen action takes place in 3D. It was a selling point of the game. So the sidestepping and the stepping into that extra axis, like, it's used a lot.
It does it better than the first Tekken game, I would say.
Aye. And
that's what turns a 3D fighter into its own genre, because it's not just a fighting game with polygons, it's a fighting game where there's a whole new dimension.
New axis, aye. So they really went for it there, and they said, right, how can we use this new axis to kind of incorporate it into like move sets and like blocking and like, eye sidestepping and just thinking about what you're going to do? I think that's sort of been lost, man. In recent 3D fighters like Mortal Kombat 10 and stuff like that.
It was an interesting kind of period when they were like, making the first 3D games. They weren't just thinking like, oh, this is the new graphical technology and it's going to look cool. They were thinking like, what new gameplay, like what does this give? Like it's like the move from you know, Super Mario World to Mario 64. That was like, what kind of opportunities does this thing being in a 3D world let us do?
If all the stag and as I say, was maybe a fifth or the sixth fight or something like that, I was having real trouble getting past Cage. I was doing it when I was like, right, I'm going to put one coin in, see how far I can get, patch it for a bit and then come back to it. I wasn't wanting to just load fucking... I wasn't wanting to load it full of credits and play arcade mode over and over again. I thought that would burn me out. I was having real trouble getting past him, and it was a game where we were on a fucking... We were on one win each, right? And fucking... He hit me down to a sliver of health and fucking... We were kind of at the side of the arena, and it was like all of a sudden I could fucking see the matrix. I could fucking I could see the fucking numbers behind the game. I could see the fucking universe in my mind, and I fucking moved the joystick along quickly, like sideways, jumped, and then did a low kick, and it fucking snided on me a ring out. And I fucking get by him, and I was like, fuck me, man. I feel like fucking Garry Kasparov right now. Like, well, I feel like a genius.
It's quite important, the Virtua Fighter games. It's a bit like the sumo wrestling in that regard.
Well, it comes back into technicality. Like, if you're talking about Tekken, right, then it's just the two of you smashing each other's heads in and seeing who can get the bar down fastest. But in this game, when you're fighting, you've got a strategy in place. So you can win this fight in three or four different ways. You can try and strategize it so you're positioning yourself to get them closer to the zone where you can get a ring out. You can block and wait until the time runs out and just block their moves and kind of be defensive. Or you can go for the Tekken mode and try and smash his face in. A good number of times out of 10, man, you're probably better off doing one of the first two, to be honest. It's Mel, you've got to think about it, Mel, you know.
I played Virtua Fighter 1 and then curiosity got the better of me. And I've got a PS3 here and I downloaded Virtua Fighter 2 as well, and then I think maybe 4 or something like that. And see, when I was playing the later ones, rather than going, right, this is a build up on what I liked about the first one, I get bored of them a lot quicker. I was I fucking wish I was playing Tekken, to the point where I ordered Tekken 3 on eBay and played it a couple of days later and fucking was like, amazing, this is so good. I had the most fun with the first one.
Aye. It's like a simulator rather than an arcade, man. I know it's a pure out and out arcade game, but it's more like a fight sim. Like, it's more intricate than
The limitations on Virtua Fighter 1 for me make it this something else. It's I don't really know how else to explain it. It's probably not a good fighting game that would hold your attention by today's standards, but there's something about the patience that's needed to learn how to play it that just struck a wee bit of a chord with me. I thought it was really cool.
Aye, and it's got lovely music and all. Takayuki Nakamura really done the damage, and not only this one, but a lot of Sega EM2 games. Really, you'll know it right away if you hear one of these tunes. Usually it's got like some sort of big synth going down, down, with something that I say by a bell or something. Class.
Got a kind of prog rock sort of sound to it.
Is this a guy that voices Cage as well and that music in Shenmue?
Aye, well, do you know what? There was something about that. I'd be lying if I said, but I think it might be this guy. But he definitely done Black Moon Cat. He definitely, definitely done that, which is a pure jam, man.
I've got an anecdote about Virtua Fighter 4. Which is a friend of the show, but probably no going to be a guest on this type of thing. My pal Rory from Ireland. He's not really what you would call a gamer in the traditional sense, but there was a pub they played in Belfast, or played in, drank in, and it had a Virtua Fighter 4 machine, and he won a fucking Virtua Fighter 4 tourney by playing as fucking Cage Kage and just spamming this fucking Mad Kit King over and over again. And there was a guy who was actually like good at competitive Virtua Fighter that couldn't beat him, and he just spammed this move over and over again. And the guy was fucking raging, like kicking a wall in that, fucking shouting his spin. I think it was just for like a couple of pictures of beer or whatever, but he just fucking cheese this tournament.
Good bit of foreshadowing for his career in politics there. Winning at all costs.
Just ask Hulk Hogan how hard that is to pass a torch. You don't want to do it, you know what I mean? But it's just the way Cootie crumbles.
Virtua Fighter 1 is a tentative recommendation for me. I think if you are interested in fighting games, you're interested in 3D fighting games in particular and their genesis, then you have to go back. It's like fucking, I don't know, it's like being into fucking rock and roll and then people going, well, fucking, did you know that black people actually invented rock and roll? And then fucking like getting them to listen to fucking the fucking real shit. Like it's like fucking, it's the origin point, man. Yeah.
Old blues music and stuff.
Aye, if you want to fucking, if you really want to fucking understand the genre, go back to the fucking the beginning. Aye. Whereas if you're not really particularly into fighting games, then you will just think that Virtua Fighter is a blocky mess and you won't understand why it's so hard.
I mean, it is a blocky mess, but it's very much a product of its time, man.
It's good, man. I liked it. I fucking, as I say, I liked it. This is a wrong opinion because 2's better. I can take it on fucking people with authority on these type of games that 2 is better. But I liked it better than 2. I had more fun with it than any other Virtua Fighter game I've played.
It's so subjective. It's got a really good 32 export, apparently. That's the jump note that's been fixed.
Aye. Anyway, so Golden Axe, the Revenge of Death Adder, is it? The Return of Death Adder?
The Revenge of Death Adder.
McCormick, why did you pick, other than the fucking obvious, the Revenge of Death Adder for Andy Mack?
I mean, I would say it's fairly obvious. Like, we can't really go 5 minutes to 3 of us without talking about Golden Axe with all of it. Foundational game for all years. But, like, this, the sequel, because it came out in the arcade and because, like, it didn't really get a home console release. I don't even know if it was released in Europe. I've certainly never seen a cabinet of it, so it was something that I didn't actually know existed until maybe last year at some point. Yeah. And it's watching a video of it, I'm like, what is this? How have I never seen this before? Like, it's because it takes the franchise, not only is it a sequel and it improves in everything in every way, I think, like, it also takes things in very weird directions, and it was just a very weird experience. Like, it was kind of like a beloved film for your childhood that you've known and loved, and then seeing that there was actually a sequel to it where, like, you know, they all go to space and some of the characters turn out to be gay, and, like, it just changes your understanding of the entire thing.
Better fly.
It was quite fascinating, and I downloaded it and played it, and I was like, Andy will fucking love this. So that's why I decided to game it. I came out in, we're talking about the Sega arcade machines early on. The Virtua Fighter came out on the Sega Model 1, actually, which is like their first console that had, first platform that had like 3D polygonal graphics. But this one was out on the System 32, which was kind of like the Sega's last great 2D arcade board. The kind of most advanced sort of 2D graphics you could get, kind of somewhere between like the time that the Mega Drive came out and the time that the Saturn came out. But as I've kind of mentioned before, they had big plans when the Saturn came out, that they wanted to port a lot of games from the arcade, the System 32 games, onto the Saturn. But, well, yeah, the team, the Japanese team behind the arcade division, weren't particularly interested in console ports. They weren't interested in helping out, so it get left by the wayside. So, yeah, the game's been a bit forgotten, but, I mean, played it and loved it, and I just
want to
hear how Andy feels about it.
Aye, no bother, man. We're talking about 32X again. This would have made a fucking brilliant 32X game if they could have worked it, you know.
It's just a shame that the life cycle of the console was about 4 months.
Sega fucking heavy dropped the ball, man. Because I mean, this is a prime example of what should have been on a 32X, right? I mean, I was like you, I've never heard of this game before. I mean, was it only released in Japan?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it was had a US release at least.
I'm like you, I've never seen a Kirby either, but mind you, my experience with Golden Axe, and I think you're the same quality, my experience with Golden Axe was the Never Dying Love, Mega Games 2, was it?
Mega Games 2, absolute boy of you're getting bought a wee game for your birthday, you're in one of the kind of forum G4 style shops. The bang for your buck you got for Mega Games 2 as a 10-year-old cannot possibly be overstated.
That was marking that experience with Golden Axe, and that and Streets of Rage sort of just defines fucking early 90s for me, man. That's brilliant. And it, like, I'm sure that we've all done the same, go to your mates or cousins. I mean, I'm sure I even played them with you at some point. A 2-player in Golden Axe and Streets of Rage is fucking peak fucking gaming, man.
I think Golden Axe had less of a chance to break out into real life violence because unlike Streets of Rage, there was no friendly fire. I don't believe you could hit each other in Golden Axe, whereas in Streets of Rage, you could end up what hang with your brother where he would accidentally hit you, and you'd be like, right, you stand still, and I hit you now. And then that's one for one, and that's fair. Like, shit like that, honestly, all the time.
Do you know what, man? Them times were the fucking best, man. I mean, bring that back, man. Friendly fire's all right. But, I mean, Golden Axe was cool, too. And the thing about it was, these 2D side-scrollers were, I mean, it didn't matter. It didn't really matter where it was, whether it was fantasy or whether it was like on streets. It was fucking just, there was something so addictive about moving right and butting fuck out of things and eating chicken and like shit like that. But that's all I knew about Golden Axe. I played this other game on the Saturn called Golden Axe the Duel, and I thought, right, this is a sequel to Golden Axe. When I played it, it was a fighting game. It's basically just your characters like Axe Battler and that for the original Golden Axe. It was a 2D fighting game.
I think they made this as a kind of compromise. Like, well, we're not going to get Revenge of Death Adder on the console, but we need something. They just kind of threw together this 2D fighting game.
It wasn't very good. So obviously, I tried to get MAME, which is obviously arcade emulator that we use. I tried to get MAME working years ago, and it was too fucking I couldn't get it going, man. I was spending too much time in it, and I get frustrated dead easy with stuff. And I just left it, man. It never did GUI, and it was all fucking having to type things into the command prompt and all that. So I left it back in. But now sort of there's ways you can in RetroArch, or what's the one you use, Carter? The other one, Advanced MAME.
Advanced MAME. To be honest, I've been fucking about with a couple of them, and That one seemed to work, so I was just like, alright, I'll not try and fuck around with this magic too much and just go with it.
Aye. So now you've got stuff like GUIs that can just play these sophisticated boards at a click of a button, and man, I wasn't expecting to be able to get it running, so I think Mick suggested RetroArch sent me fucking info on where to get the ROM and that, and it fucking worked, man. So on it comes, right? And fucking, there's no sound at first. I'm like, oh, great, no sound. But that was only for the first scene. Sound comes on, and there it is, and all it's fucking gory. A 32-bit fucking Golden Axe game.
Aye, right? I thought you would appreciate the big sprites, man. The graphics, it's just a step up for Golden Axe, I think.
Fucking so, feast for the eyes, man.
So I've not played it, so I'm asking questions here as the outsider. As a Golden Axe fan, for the loreheads out there, in the OGE, we've got Axe Battler, we've got Tyrus Flair, and we've got Gilius Thunderhead. The fucking, the greatest character of all, the dwarf.
Your favourite.
Who do we get in Revenge of Death?
I want to break this news to Mick, because I don't know how he's going to feel about it. So, you can play as Stern, who is he's pretty identical to Axe Battler. I don't know why he's Axe Battler. You can play as Dora, who is a centaur, and my favourite character. You can play as Trix, who is like a wee elf with a pitchfork. He's kind of like the skate of the franchise.
I didn't play much with him.
Yeah, near that. And you can play as a giant called Goa. But what the deal with Goa is, it's a bit like Bran Stark falling out the roof, breaking his legs, and he needs Hodor to carry him around. Goa is carrying around an injured Gilius Thunderhead.
Aye. Mario 2, Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island.
He plays a giant with Gilius on his back.
I'm gonna be Hodor with Gilius Thunderhead, obviously. I'm gonna warg into him and fucking make him be disabled so that I can control him for the rest of his life.
Yeah, so Gilius, he's the brains of the operation, he's telling him what to do, he's casting the magic spells, but Goa the giant is cutting about with a big axe, doing the actual physical work for him.
Kind of reminded me of like Krang with the big kind of, see the big kind of thing he was in, like he's possessing him kind of.
He was in like a symbiote, wasn't he? He was like in the middle of it.
Like a body snatcher. But the characters are, it's like, you know how the female characters usually more agile, faster in some ways. Well, that's the case here. The centaur is quite quick. The jump is quite. It's different. It's like different. Like, the Stern guy fights like Axe Battler in the first one, basically.
Well, for the sounds of it, the Trix would be your speedster, and the centaur is presumably just the magic character again, like Tyrus was in the other one.
Well, the thing about the centaur is the sprite's longer, right? So you can take men out at once. So that you can do a back kick, which is fucking. That's probably why. Was that why it was your favourite, McCormick?
Oh, there's many reasons why it was my favourite. She cuts about
because he's a sicko pervert.
you can do a back kick, right? Well, you're wiping out everything on screen, and all of a sudden, you're fucking back kick, and you just kick the guy behind you, man. Brilliant. So three things you don't expect.
The weapon the centaur has is like, if you remember Gladiators, the one where they've. They both get that kind of pole that they hold with two hands and kind of batter each other, knock them off. That's what the centaur's got. But my favourite thing about the centaur was, you know, Golden Axe is famous for its mounts. And this game's got some cracking mounts.
Brilliant mounts.
Talk about.
Best mounts I've fucking ever had in a game. Mounts in this game are man. You know I love a mount, right? Yeah, I fucking love a mount.
If there's one thing that Andy Mack loves, it's big sprites. If there's two things that Andy Mack loves, it's big sprites and a mount.
Fuck me, man. And you're mounted up. Your amount of mounts is fucking mountiful.
The amount of mounts.
Honestly, it's great, man. And it's like, man, the amounts are so expressive. And like, I mean, come on, right? You're riding a fucking praying mantis that fires fucking fireballs, right?
How does the centaur ride mounts?
Exactly. Right. That's the first question that you've asked. It's the first question that I asked when I started playing the centaur. I'm already half horse. How the fuck am I going to fit on a fucking dragon or on a giant praying mantis? So what she does is, when she has a mount, she fucking magically just turns on into a human with two legs and then sits on top of the mount instead of a horse running.
The horse disappears, man, and fucking legs appear.
Andy, who was your character?
Well, I went. The thing about this game is, you can go one guy to start with, and then when you die, you can pick another one. So you're never stuck. When you run out of credits, you can pick somebody else. So
I agree with it.
I went Gohan first, with Thunderheed, because I knew that was your favourite character, and I thought, in tribute to Mick, I'll play his fucking Thundernut, and played him. But I spent. Man, the mounts in the first one, right? It's like two hits and the mounts are dead in it. And this one, the mounts stay there. So, I was on that praying mantis for about three levels, man.
Oh, really? I think in the original, as you say, you get knocked off it. I think when you get knocked off it a third time, it just fucks off, it runs off the screen.
No, but in this one, you can actually equip ammo on it and shoot fucking. You can equip fucking. What's that called? A cannonball thing?
You
can fucking shoot cannonballs at cunts.
So in creating this game, like, they obviously knew that everyone loved the mount. So not only can you get on a mount, but you can also get like upgrades for it, kinda.
Unreal.
So like, I think if you're on a dragon or whatever, you can do your normal attack, but also you can pick up like a kind of catapult thing that's like mounted on the back of that, and then you kind of launch sort of. Cannonballs at people.
So past the characters then, what are the other kind of main gameplay changes from Golden Axe that people will be familiar with?
I'll get one right away, man, right? It plays like Golden Axe, right? Only like the characters when they're on the deck, like heavy breathing at and got up and the animations there when they fall and got up and all that stuff, right? So you're looking at his characters on screen, brilliant frame rate. Up to about maybe 10 on screen at one time. And it just looks alive, right? And when you punch them, it's a crunch, crunch, crunch. And so you get to the end you go through these bits of villages that look populated, like people are in their houses and stuff like that, and people are sitting around campfires. It feels like a wee community. But then you get to the end of the stage and you think, this can't get any better. And then they start walking into a screen. Like, they start walking. It's not a 2D plane. It starts walking into the screen. So it's like a totally fucking new aspect. Like, no, we said about his Z-axis earlier. starts walking into the screen, and then you're playing Golden Axe 3D.
There's a bit in one of the kind of cave levels where, like, at the second half of that level, you're walking at the screen and you're avoiding traps and stuff like that, and that kind of changes things up.
Wait, so there's first person sections?
Third person.
It's more like space area almost.
And you fight bosses in that mode and all that, carry on. I think it was just like a trick you could pull off with this board, man. I think it was like, look what we can do now type of thing. It was fucking, man, we seen it first happened, I marked out. It was like Stone Cold winning the world title at WrestleMania 15. I marked out like fuck, man. A wee cheer, a wee lap of the living room, right back on it was brilliant.
What is have they still got the wee hobbit fuckers that rob you around the campfire?
They're still there.
You battle them and steal magic for them and chickens.
The one thing I will say is I didn't know the button. I get fucking maimed a bit because I didn't know the button for the magic. I think this cab had like a big magic button. I think it had a big button that said magic on it because I couldn't find it. Like, no, you get ABC usually. Or 1, 2, 3. I couldn't find where this magic button was, so I think it was a different thing. I don't know.
The one downside of the game for me, and this is a very minor point, but what I liked about the first Golden Axe is that the more potions you got, that kind of gives you access to like stronger versions of your magic with different animations and that. But for this one, it's just there's just one for each character. Really, you just need a certain amount of potions to cast it.
It sounds like we're bigging this game up here, but just when you think you can't get any better, right? Choose your own fucking route. There's three different ways to complete this game.
It's branching paths, which were brought in some later 2D fighting games.
Well, did they rob this from Capcom's Dungeons and Dragons?
Probably. Quite possibly, yeah. But they did it so well, man.
Capcom's Dungeons and Dragons took everything for Golden Axe and then added in branching paths, so... It's only fair to take a wee bit back, I guess.
You know how in Golden Axe, right, like, oh man, you don't really get a world because the graphics are kind of so like, basic and like, the world's not that involved story-wise. Man, the characters are alive in this. Like, you can tell what Golden Axe is meant to be in this. Like, the characters, like, you can see them torturing the people that live in the village and stuff and like fucking holding them above fire like hogtied and all that, and they're all celebrating.
You got a wee bit of that. You get villagers running away in terror from the skeletons and things like that, and they all win.
So you've got that here, only it's like more involved. It's like you can sense the hate, man, in these fucking people, and you can sense like the grief in these cartoony faces and all that. It's great.
But it's like this is the stakes,
like,
this is what you're fighting against, sort of thing.
So Death Adder has presumably come back for a deed. He is causing strife throughout the land. He's set his army on the local peasantry, and you're just out to set about him. Is he kidnapped the king and queen again?
Well, I think he's recruited some sort of tribe, man. There's this recurring baddie you fight, and he never fights you as a one. It's always like a team, and they're pretty easy to beat, but there's hundreds of them. But they, you know, it's not Golden Axe, right? Unless you're getting your ass kicked off a skeleton. And there's plenty of skeletons in this. We all know that bit in Golden Axe, the famous bit. Everybody gets to that skeleton. And then you get beat with your last life, and all you can see on the screen is that skeleton like looking at you. He's kind of giving you that smirk.
I always hate the fact that they're programmed to do this, by the way. When the skeletons knock you down, they look at each other. They do that wee smirk at each other. Even if one of them's facing the other way, it turns around and looks at the other skeleton, but they're laughing at you.
And then you beat the skeleton, and then it fucking, it's just a bag of bones sitting, and then it jumps together again. It's another skeleton. Man, that kind of shit just gets in my goat, but you've got to take it a good way of bad, man. You know what I mean? You've got to take it a good way of bad, and there's a lot more good to be had in this game. Man, that's what a fucking game. I'm telling you, mate, if you've not played it, get... Honestly, man, give this game a bash. What I would really love today is play it two-player, man. We need to play as two-player at some point.
I mean, we talked about streaming and things like that, which I think would be fucking great if we can work out how to do that and it not to be shit. But also, just for us, try to work out how to do online multiplayer with emulators. Because I remember doing that fucking way back in the day. I remember about 10 years ago, a wee guy from fucking Manchester that I used to talk to on a fucking gaming forum playing fucking Sensei Soccer against them, a Mega Drive version on a fucking emulator.
Aye.
Like, it's well doable, man. The technology exists. I'm just a fucking...
I think that guy was grooming you.
Well, he was younger than us, I think, so...
It depends how intuitive the GUI is. Like, MAME is fucking... Because it's not standardised, because the boards aren't standardised, I think it's quite difficult to build a GUI for it, but like, just an emulator is like, it's based on one system, so it might be a bit easier. I don't know, man, I'm making this up. But I think it might be something like that. But man, Mick McCormick, three cheers for the fucking... Three cheers for the Scorpion mount.
Oh fuck, I right mentioned that one. Yeah, they take mounts in loads of weird experimental directions. It's fucking great.
That's a fucking thing of beauty, that, man. The thing takes up like half a screen, and you're just cutting about, man, and it's claws moving, you're rocking that, and you're just thinking, this is fucking amazing.
And like, it's a bold man that first decided to fucking mount a scorpion.
Right, but it works.
Yep. So, in terms of you are... We don't know if it came out in Europe. You are... It's fair Saturday, right? You're a wee guy, you're in Largs, and you get fucking a pound in your pocket. Say it's 20p a fucking credit. How far are you going to get on that for a quid?
God, man, well, it's hard to say. It's that good, man, that a quid's just not going to be enough. But I would say, first shot? Are you talking first shot here?
First time you've ever played that, I go for that.
You'd be hard-pressed to get by two levels, man. It's just a pure swathe of enemies. But do you know what I will say? Difficulty is a wee bit... I found it a wee bit less hard than Golden Axe 1. A wee bit. Because for instance, we were talking about the skeletons weren't as cunty. Like, they were a bit easier to beat, man, whereas in Golden Axe were crafty wee bastards. Here, they're sort of easier to negotiate. But, to complete this game, for instance, it's going to cost a fortune because Deathadder, the last boss, you've got to fight him, what, three times, Mick? Three times or something?
Because
Deathadder in the first gen is like a kind of, in terms of your 16-bit games, maybe the hardest boss that I can think of. He's like legendary difficulty on him.
Difficult,
so it's compounded even. It's further than that, I guess, in the sequel.
So I would say that Deathadder's not as difficult to beat in this one, but you've got to beat him. He's quite difficult still, and you've got to beat him like, multiple times. So that would be probably the
Can he still summon that dragon that it's impossible to dodge?
Oh, mate, he summons that dragon like fuck, and the dragon's never looked better. The dragon's never looked better, man. Also, I know I just keep talking about mounts, man, but the skeleton dragon, that deserves a mention too.
you can tell that the developers of this game liked the mounts as much as we did as players. Like, they just were like, okay, what about for the sequel? We had 10 more mounts, and each one's more outlandish than the last.
The mounts are class.
I'm in a minority here where I don't really fucking give a fuck about them, but alright, fucking Mason Mount, you tell us, gaze your top three mounts.
Mason
and...
Mount is Neighbourly Gilmer.
Gaze your top three mounts and... who the fuck is Mason Mount? Is he he's like a Chelsea player or something?
He's an English centre midfielder that's currently keeping it Scotland style
at
Billy Gilmer at the moment, aye?
Right, okay. Well, gaze your top three mounts in Golden Axe, Revenge of Deathadder.
Oh man, right, that's easy. That's fucking easy. Right, first, I'm going to go number...
Go 3-2
right.
Then.
Right, okay, number three, we're going to go with, as I just said, Skeleton Dragon. Tyrannosaurus, whatever he is.
I thought that might have been number one. It sounds pretty good.
He is pretty good, but not as good as the other two. Like, he shoots fire at his mouth, right? That's basically what it is. But he's sort of yield a range, isn't he? Great. It's sort of like a... Do you remember the dragons in the first one? It's like a purple dragon. And he shoots like fireball.
Shoots a fireball. It was one that shot fire on the ground, and it was one that shot a fireball out.
So you've got him at number three. Number two is a trusty old bastard. I actually had a wee pet name for him, which you'll find out in a minute. I had a pet name for all these mounts, man, that you'll find out in a minute. But the praying mantis that also shoots out fire. You can get this praying mantis in a variety of colours, green, purple, and I think even appears as solid gold at one point. It was pretty good. Number one, poor man. Number one can only be this one, and it's because it is an absolute thing of beauty. A horrible looking motherfucker. You were talking about Xenomorphs the other night, Mick. This thing fucking puts a Xena in Xenomorphs, man. It's fucking roached. But does it fucking damage? This is the Scorpion Mount.
The Scorpion Mount.
It's an intimidating looking thing.
Oh man, it's class. You've got to have a look at it. It's amazing. I like the way he kind of moves his claws when he's walking. It's like, fuck, don't fuck with me, man. It's like, don't fuck with me. It's horrifying.
Well, we're about to wrap up. You seem like you've got something to say. You were saying you'll find out in a minute. You'll find out in a minute. What is this? What have you got up your sleeve for us?
Are we wrapping up? If I'm wrapping up, I'll do my bit.
We're wrapping up.
Right.
Do your bit.
All right, okay, right. So, this is, you know, I do like wee impromptu odes now and again, man. Maybe once every fucking eight or nine episodes, but I've got one here.
I think we know, and I think in particular, it's a favourite among our intrepid listeners, the Oreheads out there.
Right, okay, so this is about what we've just been talking about, Golden Axe Revenge of Death Adder. So, centaurs, dwarves, and big muscly men with axes and daggers with big pointy ends. Fantasy monsters and fantastic mounts, and all the free credits a spammer can count. A questionable bit was the young tribal baddies who danced from a fire like raging wee laddies. As they chipped away at you like flies round shite, this game's best played when you're high as a kite. And on to the mounts, and this are a plenty. The big praying mantis, I named him Big Jeffrey. The big scorpion thing, I named him the king, whilst the mousy wee cunt I called Chandler Bing. The meme is a bastard, not much we do know, but when it boots up, you're in for a show. Because classics like this, they died with a cab, replaced by the puggies, digital pap. But now that we're pirates, manky as fuck, your treasures and files instead of the muck. And play what you want, it's only two clicks away, we're just Steven bastards, what can we say?
Whee!
Eddie's fucking back, everyone.
Yeah, hey.
Beautiful. Right, what we got in store next time?
What's the agenda?
In terms of scheduling, after this one, there is a Sonic fan game special coming out.
A very special interview with head of Sonic fan games HQ, Perfect Kero Zero.
Yes, who is the convener of the Sonic Amateur Games Expo, which is one of the biggest indie games expos on the internet. So,
so look forward to that, all the Sonic inclined fans out there, you sickos. we'll play it by ear. We'll see what we've got for you after that, but that should be out fucking lickety split after this one.
Fucking yes, man. This has been fucking class. I really enjoyed this one. I really enjoyed the game. You know, I think Neddy's good, and really good as it is, but when you really fucking get passionate about a game, it makes it better, man, because it's a really good fucking laugh. I end up writing mad poems in it.
Aye. No, agreed. And we shagged all your mounts.
Pumped everybody's moz. Aye, we mounted your mo, aye. Sign it out. See you next time.
Peace.